is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, well, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Nina Simone, Wild is the Wind.
Okay.
All right, so here's a description of the album. It says, released in 1966 by Philips Records, Wild is the Wind is one of Nina Simone's most emotionally potent and artistically rich albums. A collection of outtakes from previous sessions, the album transcends its piecemeal origins to form a hauntingly cohesive statement on love, longing, and personal turmoil. Simone's vocal delivery is raw and deeply expressive, gliding effortlessly from tender vulnerability to defiant strength. The title track, Wild is the Wind, is a masterclass in interpretation. Simone stretches the song into a slow-burning, sensual lament, transforming it into one of her signature performances. Other highlights include Four Women, a powerful narrative exploring the intersecting identities of Black womanhood, and Lilac Wine, a delicate, dream-like ballad. Blending elements of jazz, classical, folk, and blues, Wild as the Wind showcases Simone's genre-defying artistry and her unmatched ability to convey complex emotional landscapes. It remains one of her most acclaimed and enduring works, celebrated for both its political consciousness and its poetic beauty. All right, so this, it was released on the 16th of September, 1966, and the genres are jazz, blues, folk, and R&B. Released on Philips Records and produced by Hal Mooney. And there's 11 songs on the album, and side one and side two split for the first five songs and then the other six on the second half. So the album starts with I Love Your Lovin' Ways, and side one ends with That's All I Ask. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, and we've linked the album in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music, so if you want to pause after that that song, we'll take a break halfway through to discuss the album at the halfway point. And we also want to encourage you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out during these episodes and even pick an album for us to review. So lots of cool stuff over there. But without further ado, here we go. Here is the first song on the album, I Love Your Lovin' Ways. Okay, and ending side one with That's All I Ask. This is a pretty amazing. I had knew the name Nina Simone before, didn't know anything about her. I was just sort of vaguely familiar with her. Yeah, she's got an amazing, I don't know, there's like a wisdom or something in her voice. Like she's like this sort of all knowing sort of figure. It's like, okay, everything's going to be okay. Things are kind of rough right now, but hey, like a calming sort of, I don't know. I get that kind of sense from her. But yeah, I mean, she's got a very like a interesting, unique voice. This album, I feel like, and it obviously it was made up of outtakes from some of her previous albums, but it's sort of it sort of runs the gamut in terms of genres, but it doesn't, nothing feels out of place.
No. The first song even, like, just seems to be, I mean, I don't know if she considered it sort of a throwaway or anything like that, but it was, you know, I was kind of surprised. I'd never heard her do stuff like that. Like,
it like sounded a bluesy more like some, sort of.
Well, it's almost rock and roll. It sounded almost more like something that Etta James would do or something like that. And I was a little bit surprised to hear Nina Simone do it. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, she can hold her own there. That's pretty good. Yeah, but yeah, the other ones, getting into it where she's obviously getting a little more serious. Yeah, Four Women, that was pretty, you know, basically just sort of describing four different women who've, you know, not exactly had the best lives. And she doesn't even have to really go elaborate into it. She just like has like a couple of lines about each one of them, and it's just somehow enough powerful enough to actually sort of convey the emotion of the figure.
Yeah, it's sort of like she trusts the listener to fill in the gaps, and she makes it easy to do that, you know. And she actually she wrote that song too. You know, so I think it's the only one on the album she actually did write herself. So the instrumentation is great, and it fits in well, and it is sort of that thing of that we were talking about on that not the last Elvis album that we did, but the one before, where it was more like orchestration,
right,
and not necessarily a band, but the first one was that the first one was a little more not simple, but a little more just sort of spontaneous, I guess.
Well, yeah, the first one was more of like a blues band backing her. But the other ones, like, it's obviously more of a production sound going for it, but it's not too much or anything like that. I mean, it's more of a jazz production anyway. And, you know, it's actually, there's an orchestration, but it seems to be fairly pared back, and it's back in the mix too. And you can hear the bass and the drum and they're, as jazz is in a lot of senses, not necessarily freeform jazz, but in, you know, sort of a pop jazz sense, the drum and the bass is like sort of subdued anyway, and basically it just sort of carries along and accompanies the voice, where definitely the voice is the thing that everybody pays attention to in this, and everything just complements it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very obvious, like it's well, well balanced, well mixed. And I don't know, I was going to see who, it doesn't really say who's playing on it. That's the thing, is it's made up of, it was recorded.
Session musicians, yeah, mostly.
Yeah. It was made up of, like recordings and outtakes from other sessions. So I'm sure there's so many people that played it. Yeah, it was recorded between 1964 and 65.
And apparently she released about 10 albums between 64 and 67. So there could be like five different albums she pulled from this one.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to know what's from what.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's why it seems so varied. But oddly enough, it all fits together. And maybe it's just the way she carries. It might just be her voice. It might just be just the way that she sort of, I don't want to say composes a song, because, well, she did the one. That's the way she like chooses her music and stuff like that, is it kind of fits really well. And this is like considered a classic album, and it's almost like a collection of B-sides.
Yeah. But at the same time, like if you didn't know going into it that it was made up of outtakes,
you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't think anything of it. Like, there's nothing so far, there's nothing jarring, and nothing like, nothing feels out of place or anything like that. And yeah, it just, like, for me, I'm sort of kind of getting just lost in the emotion of her voice, which is rare for me when I'm listening to music. I'm not like I enjoy people's vocals, but I tend to more pay attention to the music. That's just what my brain goes to. And maybe on the second or third time, I'll pay attention to the vocalist. But with her, it's like I'm sort of, the music is not secondary, but it's like you said, it's lifting her up and it's supporting her. And her voice is the thing that I'm paying the most attention to.
But yeah, you find that with a lot of like jazz singers, like, you know, with, names aren't coming to me. Ella Fitzgerald or who's the other really big one? Billie Holiday. Same sort of thing. They seem to concentrate more on like their voices as opposed to actually really what's going on around them. But what's going on around them is not to be ignored, but it's there mostly to sort of prop up the voice.
It's not like, like Miles Davis or John Coltrane, where it's like, it's all about the music. This is more like, it's similar. It is still jazz, but it's not like crazy, like improvised freeform stuff.
No, this isn't freeform jazz. It's not a jazz fusion. It's considered sort of a pop jazz, but it's always been kind of a little bit outside of the pop realm. It's a little more sophisticated than that. But it's more of a pop format, is what I mean. And a pop format doesn't mean necessarily throw away. It's just a different format. And it can be absolutely every bit as legitimate as anything else out there.
Exactly. Yeah. And when this album was released, like it was a pretty significant hit right off the bat. Like it wasn't something that was a slow burn, at least in terms of like critical reception. So the album was a Billboard magazine special merit pick on release, with the reviewer commenting, "Simone sets up an exceptional romantic mood that offers top listening delight." And the song "Four Women" was released as a single and gained attention. I'll get to that in a little bit when we get to some of the facts that I found, but the song "Four Women" was actually banned from some radio stations.
Go figure. I mean, there's nothing really controversial about it unless you're like a piece of crap. So it says more about the stations banning it than it says about Nina.
And looking back, not to get political, because this isn't really a political show, but it's funny looking back at the absurdity of, like, it's, people took that stuff so seriously back then, but now you look at it and it's ridiculous. It's like, why would you be against black people just existing? But a lot of that stuff is still happening with black people and with a lot of other sort of groups. And it's funny, it's that old saying, is the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, I know. And yet somehow things, as they age, they start to look a little ridiculous. Even as you're amidst the other thing, which is when people start talking about, it's like, good grief, it's 2025. Why are we still having this conversation?
Yeah, it's important to have art that is commenting on what's happening in the world at the moment. And, you know, at the risk of sort of dating the art, I think it's important, but it doesn't really, it's not like, well, maybe sometimes it does, but like, I don't think it's sort of a snapshot of what was happening at the time, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it was Joe Strummer said that the most important thing that a musician can do is to be of their time. more so than to be timeless, I think. To be of your time. I mean, it's fine if something ages a little bit. I mean, sometimes that gives it sort of a retro, you know, appeal later on down the road. But to be of your time is to sort of, like, I don't know if I always agree with that, but I understand it. That
yeah, I don't agree with it in terms of like jumping on a trend and trying to follow trends.
I don't think that's what he meant at all.
No, I don't think that's what he meant. I know what he meant is, like, you know, because all there ever is right now. We can plan for the future and hope for the best, and we can learn from the past. Hopefully you learn from the past, but all there ever is what's happening right now, like right now in this moment. And I think that's what he's saying. It's like, you know, make your art for now. Make your art for what's happening right now, either in the world or in your life. Make the art for right now. And I think that's exactly what she did. And if it's genuine and it's not, you're not doing it in the sense of following trends, but it's genuine, even if what you're talking about isn't relevant anymore, you can still go back and listen to it in a historical sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's part of learning from the past.
It's part of learning from the past, but also, again, as things turn on, go on, and, you know, for better or for worse, some of these things stay relevant through the time. Like, you know, I don't think anything that The Clash put out has been, let's say, comes off as being too old-fashioned as far as anything they said or anything like that.
Yeah, even all the songs that are about, like, all the thinking about, like, all the protest songs in the 60s of about the Vietnam War. It's like, just because the Vietnam War is over doesn't mean we don't still have war. But getting back to this album, yeah, I did manage to find some pretty interesting facts about the album. Like we said, it is made up of outtakes, but it is one of her best. Wild Is the Wind wasn't recorded as a cohesive album. It is a compilation of unused tracks from earlier recording sessions between 1964 and 65. Despite this, it's widely considered one of Simone's most emotionally powerful and artistically unified records. And I think we've already discussed that. It still works as an album.
And if this is the stuff she was, you know, almost thrown away, I wonder what stuff she did throw away.
So she made Wild Is the Wind her own, inspiring future legends. Although the title track, which we haven't listened to yet, although the title track was originally written for a 1957 film and previously sung by Johnny Mathis, Simone's version became definitive. It later inspired David Bowie, who covered the song on his 1976 album Station to Station, in direct tribute to her interpretation. The album highlights Simone's classical training. On tracks like Black Is the Color of My True Love's Hair, Simone uses sparse, almost meditative piano arrangements that reveal her background in classical music. She originally trained to be a classical pianist, but before turning to jazz and blues due to her racial barriers.
Which is just so bullshit. I mean, I'm glad that we've got this stuff because it's really, really good. But it's sort of a shame she wasn't able to do what she actually wanted to do.
Yes, but I think, you know, I think a lot of artists are put in a position of not doing what they want to do, but doing what they're meant to do.
This is true.
You know, I think, you know, there's like Bob Dylan, started making folk music because no one wanted to be in a band with him. He wanted to be like a Buddy Holly kind of rock and roll rockabilly guy.
Yeah, he wanted to. Yeah, I think he at one point he even said that he's just like, you know, as a kid he just wanted to be Elvis.
Yeah, and you know, not music, but comedy. George Carlin wanted to be a film actor. and like do like maybe do some comedies, but also do some drama, and wanted to sort of follow that trajectory. But he became one of the most important voices in stand-up comedy. So it's like you're not doing the thing you wanted to do in the first place, but you are sort of put in a place of what you were meant to do. And I think that's her here. Like, her voice is not really a classical voice, but it's a voice that is much more interesting than a classically trained vocal. Like doing classical music. Like, this is more interesting to me to listen to.
Yeah, I can sort of understand that. I understand what you're talking about. I wonder what her voice would have been like as classical. But I mean, even as a classical pianist, clearly she can play the piano. So it's just a shame that she wasn't able
that
to...
That door wasn't open for her.
Exactly. But yeah, we got this instead, and this is still really, really good. It's just unfortunate circumstances that sort of forced it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, the song For Women was controversial and banned by some radio stations. The song For Women tells the story of four black women, each shaped by different historical and social forces. Due to its frank discussion of race and identity, some stations deemed it too provocative and banned it, which only further solidified its cultural impact.
Of course. You ban something, it's just, you know, it creates curiosity.
Yeah. They actually have a name for it now. It's called the Streisand effect. It comes from it's the more you try to control or try to get people to not talk about something, the more they're going to talk about it. And it came from Barbara Streisand. She something to do with she didn't want the paparazzi at her wedding, so she told them, "Hey, this is where my wedding is. Don't go here." And of course,
that's exactly where they went.
Yeah,
that's that wasn't smart. I'm sorry. Don't tell the paparazzi what you're gonna do.
Yeah,
if you don't want them there.
Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you tell them, don't come, they're going to come.
They're going to come.
If they deem you important enough.
Yeah, exactly. And so, the fact that radio stations banned it, and anytime you ban a song or a film or anything, the more curious people are going to be about it. It's like, okay, well, I got to see it because I got to see why they banned it. Why did they ban this? It's got to be like, it just tickles that curious part of the brain.
Yeah.
So it has the opposite effect of what you wanted. And so number five, it was actually her final studio album for Philips Records. Wild as the Wind marked the end of Simone's prolific and politically charged period with Philips, during which she released 7 albums in just 3 years, 1964 to 67. She would later sign with RCA, where her music would become even more explicitly activist in tone.
Okay.
So those are some interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the rest of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Pick a Disc podcast. So check that out.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedy Podcast Network under Linktree/WeDigPodcast. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right. And ending the album with Either Way I Lose. This is, I don't really know what else to say. I mean, this is an incredible album. If you didn't know that it was recorded over a period of 3 years and made up of outtakes from different albums and different sessions and maybe even different studios, you wouldn't really think anything of it. It's still a cohesive piece on its own, which is pretty amazing that all the sort of pieces fell into place like that.
It's almost like I don't know if this is necessarily the way it was intended, but it almost seems like when they were producing the other albums that came along, and then, you know, one song they were going to put on the album, they're like, no, let's wait and put it on this other album.
Yeah, it's almost like it was planned all along. Like,
yeah, it's just like, oh, we'll take the best stuff from these other sessions, and then, you know, a few years down the road, we're just going to unleash this thing on the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no bad songs here. I mean, it's every song is interesting. Every song is different, but it's interesting. I really don't know what else to say. I really don't have any criticism. Even Wild Is the Wind, which is 7 minutes long, it didn't feel 7 minutes. Like I was not bored at all.
No, it was a good song. It felt sort of long to me, but not in a bad way. It kept your attention because it's just, you know, Nina's voice doing what it does. And just a simple piano accompaniment with it. And I think, yeah, that's one of the live tracks, which, it's funny, if you didn't know it was a live track, you wouldn't know.
No, exactly. Yeah,
it just sounds like another track on the album and something like that. I don't know if whether they edited out the applause or something like that. I have no idea.
Yeah, they must have, yeah.
Or whether they, you know, had everything live, or had the whole band live, like going into a board or something where they didn't pick up the audience at all or something like that. I have no idea.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, I can't think of anything bad. What would be your three highlights on the album?
I liked, Breakdown and Let It All Out. I thought that was good. Four Women's still a really good highlight. There's so many other ones on there, but I think I'm going to have to pick, I'm going to go with I Love Your Lovin' Ways just because it was just a little bit different from the rest of the album. And it's just, I was surprised that she did that sort of thing and she did it well. So yeah, I'm going to pick that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would go with, Breakdown and Let It All Out was, yeah, that was a really good song. I think Four Women, that definitely stands out to me. I think the title track, I think I could go with Wild Is the Wind.
This, honestly, I could have picked any of them, really. Lilac Wine was another really good one. Black Is the Color of My True Love's Hair. Yeah, there's not, like you said before, there's not really a bad song on the album. For an album of what seemed to be throwaways, there's not a throwaway.
Really? Yeah. It's pretty incredible. So I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this again?
Yeah, I'd probably listen to this again.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too.
Whether immediately or not, probably not, but I definitely would listen to it again at some point.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where I think we sort of have the caveat of, well, yeah, I would listen to it if I'm in the mood to listen to it. But I can see myself, and I think that's true, but I can also see myself being in the mood to listen to it pretty frequently. Like, it's not something I could just put on all the time, but it's also not something that it's like, oh, I'm rarely in the mood to hear it. It's sort of in between. Yeah. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to check us out at polyphonicpress.com. You can get all the episodes that we've done so far and different updates and everything there. And you can also, if it's your first time listening, you can be sure to follow us on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And you can leave us a rating and review, because it helps people discover the show. And tell your friends about us and everything like that. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.